And we are live for episode 3 of the Tennis Galaxy podcast. Yes, you heard it right. Episode number 3. The French Open is over and Rafael Nadal reigns supreme at the tournament once again. His 12th French Open title, taking his Grand Slam tally to 18, just 2 within Federer. Hello everyone, I am your host Prasad and I'm joined by Prakash and Rajkamal from the United States. Hi guys, how are you doing? How has the week been for you?
Hi Prasad, how are you? Yeah, I'm doing well. Always nice to have a week. The tennis Grand Slam finals, you know, one of the weeks that you never want to miss the matches.
So, yeah. One more, yeah. Prakash, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, Prasad?
All good. If I say good, yeah. you know, I'm lying, isn't it? Because the Grand Slam tally is now down to 2 between Federer and Nadal, and it's the annual slam for, you know, the Nadal fans that they get to cheer now, and congratulations to them. Nothing. No jokes apart, but congratulations to them. He's been a beast on the surface and he's definitely the greatest of all time on clay. Or greatest of all time in the sport will be a debate, but let's get on with the final then. And Dominic Thiem beating Djokovic in the semi-final, that being a 5-setter. Going on to the final, taking a set of Nadal, which I read because Nadal hadn't dropped a set since the 2014 final. So he was on a 9-set winning streak, if I'm not wrong. And let's go to any one of you who would like to answer. How did the final pan out? Was it as expected? Were any of you surprised that Thiem took a set of Nadal?
I was actually surprised that Thiem took a set of Nadal, particularly given that he had to play 4 days in a row. And then it was a very grueling match against Djokovic. If you remember, before the tournament, we talked about this, that Thiem would have to beat these two back-to-back, probably.
Yes.
And we're talking then about how tough it's going to be. Now, that's before the scheduling, right? And now, when you add that to the fact that he had to play on Friday, luckily, Hatsuno didn't give too much of a fight, but still, he had to play on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And that's really difficult going into a match with Nadal. So I expected a straight sets blowout, and I was pleasantly surprised by how competitive the first two sets were.
Rakash?
Yeah. I was expecting Thiem to win at least one set, the way he's been playing, you know, if you look at it. Since the Monfils match, he's been playing actually very good, you know. And I think credit to Djokovic to, you know, pull that semifinal to a 5-setter, right?
Yeah.
But Thiem should have closed it out in 4 sets, but I guess, you know, the delays and all that. But and also this season he had beaten Nadal at Barcelona, so I was expecting to put up a good fight and. He did put up a very good fight, but in the end, yeah, I mean, playing the last 4 days in a row, finally caught up, you know, because the last two sets were pretty. I would say the fourth set was not really a 6-1 set; it was pretty close. It just, you know, very close games there. Well, 7 games, I think.
Yeah,
and the eventual result is a 6-1 loss, but in the fourth set. But I think only the third set was the only one where I felt Thiem wasn't there on the court, but the rest of the 3 sets, I think, was pretty competitive.
So, Rajke, let's take our listeners through the third and the fourth set, if you've just managed to see, check. Because 6-1, 6-1, like Prakash said, the fourth set doesn't, you know, give you the complete picture of what the score line looks like. And the third set was a blowout, I think. Lapse in concentration, maybe, or fatigue that got to him.
So, actually, now to understand the third and fourth sets, you have to look at what happened before that. You know, the second set was very funny because Nadal was holding serve very comfortably and he hardly had problems in any of his service games. And both of them held till 5-all and then Thiem held to make it 6-5. And then suddenly Nadal loses his serve at 5-6, you know, which is not what you expect from him on this particular court. So, that was very surprising and Thiem won it. And then Nadal took a break, he regrouped. And then he mentioned in the press conference that it gave him some time to think about his tactics and so on and so forth. And Thiem probably just relaxed for a bit, and you just can't do that against Nadal on this court. He's going to make you pay. and he did.
Perfect, perfect. Yeah, perfect. And even when I missed the final, I could not watch it. I was not at home, but I was following the scoreline. And when it was 3-0 in the third set, I thought Thiem would be doing a Djokovic, maybe resting a bit, allowing this set to pass by and then pouncing on in the fourth. But then it proved too much, isn't it? And I think we can all narrow it down to the fact that he played 4 days back-to-back with those rain delays and stuff. And that pretty much breaks the rhythm and causes fatigue. And
that's so I'm very disappointed with the scheduling, you know.
Yeah,
Next year, we're going to have the roof and this better not happen again, because a wonderful first week was sort of ruined by the second half, which was completely ridiculous. Even the Federer and other semi-final played in the wind and so on and so forth. Now, I'm not saying that without the scheduling, Thiem would have been favorite. Of course not. Nadal would have been the heavy favorite, but perhaps like not. Thiem would have put up a better fight and it would have been fun to see it, even if the result had been the same, right? So,
Prakash, we've been seeing this. We've been seeing Rafa's dominance at the Grand Slam for like now the past 14 years. He's won 12 titles, I think. 12. 15 right. years, yeah, 15, 15 years, yeah, 12. One of them, the three being Federer, Wawrinka and Djokovic. Do you think the roof should have been implemented a bit earlier, seeing the magnitude of the tournament? I mean, it's a Grand Slam. Yeah. Why are you waiting for 2019 or 2020 to implement that?
That's true. But I mean, generally, the rain hasn't had as bad an effect at the French Open as, you know, the other slams, you know, because with the clay, generally you can start, you know, you can sometimes even play with a little bit of rain. And so over the years, it hasn't been this bad, you know, this is one of the worst years. So like, for example, Wimbledon has always been rain affected, you know, that was the slam that needed the roof the most. And they were like, I think a few years late in getting it, but they did get it. In 2009, I guess they started.
We all remember the 2000.
And then US Open had like, I think 5-6 years of like Monday finals, you know, for a while, I think, starting with the 2008 final. If I remember right, 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, I think was a Sunday final. But they were, 13 was a Monday final. So I think there are quite a few, like, you know, Monday finals because of the rain. And so they really had to get the roof, you know. And because in the hard courts, you know, it takes a while to dry up the courts even after it stops raining. So that kind of messed up, you know. So they had to, like, they really need the roof. So I would say the French Open, I mean, I guess they're finally getting on board. I think all tennis stadiums, they need to have a, you know, a roof because it's ridiculous, you know, in these Asian time that, you know, you got to sit and wait on rain.
Yeah, especially
a sport in,
yeah, correct. And especially when you look at the other half, you know, the Nadal half played its games on time. The matches happened on as per schedule, but the other half had to wait a day and the delays were there to be seen, right? From the semifinals, quarterfinals to the semifinals. Even the quarterfinals was delayed, the semifinal was delayed. And that we are not taking anything away from Nadal, but I think that plays a huge factor, isn't it? That's a huge factor in determining the physical strength, physicality of the game, isn't it, Raj? Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, in one sense, it's good that it's Nadal and he's such a heavy favorite. Imagine if it had been two evenly matched players, say Djokovic, Thiem had been the final, and Djokovic had only played 2 days and Thiem had played 4 days in a row, then it would have been much more unfair, right? But here, because it's Nadal, we know that he probably would have won anyway, so it at least doesn't affect the result. So in that sense, I think they got lucky. So, you know, that's true.
But, and also another point is that, no, it's not just the French Open, if you look at it, right?
Yeah.
And even in Rome, if you see, you know, that's where Nadal's comeback started, you know, because in Rome, he had a easier route to the final than Djokovic, who was again, I think, you know, his side of the draw was more rain affected. And definitely the final was, I think, a reflection, you know, where Djokovic basically lost two easy sets, you know, and won one tough set. But, you know, so maybe if, you know, if Rome had a roof, who knows, you know, maybe Djokovic is winning that and who knows, you know, how things should have panned out, you know. So I think, yeah, I mean, we need these roofs at, you know, as many tournaments as possible, you know, considering that, you know, like for example, I mean, I would point out to Germany, right? Like, even small tournaments like Halle, they have an indoor, I mean, like, they have a roof, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's possible, no? Tournament should, I think, be able to get that. And, yeah, that could make, like, a lot of difference, you know? Yeah, it's ridiculous that rain can have some say.
Yeah, and one argument that I hear, which I don't like, is that both players have to play the same conditions. I mean, that's not a valid reason.
Yeah,
I mean, because different players have different strengths, which are affected. Like, for example, Federer may have a better serve, and the wind affects him more than Nadal, or Nadal may have a better forehand, which affects him, you know, more than Federer, or whatever.
Right.
So you want to give the best possible conditions and then see who is the better player, not, you know, make them both play in horrible conditions. So that's not a justification at all.
That's true.
But, Perfect. And moving on to some players there now in the top four. We've predicted a lot during the past two episodes, and I think we have to talk about the expectations if they were met. Like you said, Rajke, Federer exceeded expectations. We were expecting him to be knocked out in the fourth round, but he got to the semifinals and obviously faced the biggest hurdle of his biggest rival of his career. What's your take on Djokovic and Federer's performances in this Roland Garros?
Oh, I'm very happy with both the performances of Federer and Djokovic. And I underestimated Federer. Remember, I picked Schwartzman to lose to him, but Schwartzman didn't even get there.
Yeah.
Federer was really very good against Wawrinka, you know, and he showed off his variety even against Nadal. But it was really tough for him in the wind. But this is a great result for Federer. I mean, who would have thought that he would actually get to the semifinal and play against Nadal, right? Having skipped this tournament for 3 years on his weakest surface at the age of 37, almost 38. The guy is just a genius, and this is going to give him a lot of confidence from Wimbledon.
Yep.
And Djokovic again did not exceed expectations, but he met expectations because we were talking about the Djokovic Thiem match potentially going either way, and it was a very close five setter. The wind affected him as well. A lot of things went against him, and he still reached the semifinal, which is what I expected. So both of them performed according to expectations, so pretty happy with their performance.
Prakash, can you give our listeners a few stats? Rafael Nadal, I think, claimed his 84th title. Do you have a few stats for us?
Yeah, I think actually it's the 83rd title. This one. He won. Of course, and the obvious one is that, you know, he's won it, the Roland Garros for the 12th time. And now he has like 93 match wins in Roland Garros. Only two losses. And...
insane.
Yes. He's like 26-1 versus top 10. Only lost to Djokovic in 2015.
Correct.
He has 17 sets. He has won 6 love. And he's 6-1 versus number 1 set, Roland Garros. So, some really, you know, tough, big numbers there. And, of course, the all-time Grand Slam tally now, you know, he's been the closest to Federer, I guess, since since Federer won the second slam and Nadal had zero because Nadal hadn't started winning yet. So, but since both started winning, since Nadal started winning, I think he's the closest he has been. No? He's never come more than three till now, and now he's like two Grand Slams within Federer's 20. So it's going to be interesting going forward the next, I guess.
Correct.
Couple of years.
Yeah.
So how things pan out, whether Federer can still add or, you know, it's Nadal, because I think Nadal at French Open, I guess, I mean, at least the way the clay season started, it looked like, okay, you know, there could be something different. But now again, we are, I think, back to square one on French Open, you know, how do you beat this guy? Of course, I think Thiem did, I think, show, I think maybe next time they meet in semifinals, not in the finals, because I think it's too much of an ask straight away. But I think if it's, for example, if Thiem is in the semifinal against Nadal next year, that could be, you know, so the draw will always be, I think, crucial.
Yes,
but
yeah.
Still, you know, even, but with, even like, you know, say if you, I mean, yeah, even with the draw, of course, you know, there's still a good chance that Nadal still will, the way he's playing, if he can keep capturing this kind of form, you know, during these 2 weeks, there are very few really, you know, true clay courters who can actually play the game required to beat him, because and you have to play, I think, a clay quarters game to beat him, which Thiem does, you know, more than anyone else.
Correct. And that's where my next question is for you, Rajke. And that question is, Dominic Thiem's been so close, isn't it, in the Roland Garros finals, back to back years now. Are we going to see him finally lift the big one next year at the French Open anytime soon? Because he's number four in the world right now, and ideally the likes of Thiem, Zverev should be challenging for the majors now. Do you think there will be a change next year onwards?
At the French Open or in general?
In general, but starting with the French Open, because Thiem's been touted to be the next king of clay, that's a subjective question, but anyway, he's performed well on clay, isn't it? So starting the next year from the French Open, yes.
Well, I think the best chance to unseat the big three would be at the French Open. Of course, Nadal is the prohibitive favorite there, but at least, you know, you can imagine, say, Federer perhaps not being as strong on clay. But if you look at something like US Open, you probably have to go through Djokovic and Federer, two of the greatest hardcore players. Wimbledon, you know, you have to go through both of them, and Nadal is also there in these slams. So I think it's going to be tougher for them outside clay. Whereas on clay, maybe Federer is not so successful next year. Right. So perhaps it might be actually easier on clay. So but then again, it's again going to depend on the draw. Right. So we don't know yet whether Djokovic and Nadal are going to be one and two. If one of them, say Nadal, drops outside the top two, then Djokovic and Nadal could play semifinal. Right. Seedings are very important as well. So
correct.
If that happens, then you don't have to beat both of them. So, I mean, it's contingent on a lot of factors. But at this point of time, you know, I'm not very confident that it's going to happen, because the big three are just, at this stage, they're outliers. We have to
accept. Yeah, in the league of their own. Yeah, in the league of their own. And we all know what happens when they are. And so, Prakash, what have we got next on the ATP World Tour? And the clay season is over now. And the grass season, the our most favorite season starts. So what do we have next now?
So, I mean, we got, I think, Stuttgart, right, next week. But Federer said he's going to play only Halle this season. And Nadal said, I think, he's directly going to show up at Wimbledon, no? Basically, so he's not even going to play any warm-ups on grass, I guess. So, to basically be as ready as possible. And Djokovic, most of the times he has won... the Wimbledon, I think the first three times he won, he hadn't played a match on grass before he won it. It's only last year that he played Queens and he lost in the final to Cilic, a very close match. That was the only time that, you know, he had played a warm-up before and won, you know, like, and still won Wimbledon. So I don't know if that's a route he wants to take, like, you know. But I think, he'll play Queens because, he may not play this next week. But I expect him to play either Queens or Halle. Most probably Queens, I think, because he's been playing that. So, I think we'll... and then, of course, Wimbledon, the big one.
Yeah, it's in the first 2 weeks of July. Correct me if I'm wrong, because the second week of July is potentially the biggest in sport history, because we have the Wimbledon final, the Cricket World Cup final, and the Formula One race all happening at the same time. during the Sunday on that day in the UK, in the United Kingdom. And it's been a wonderful French Open. I think if you personally ask me, I seeing all your predictions made me a bit nervous. Fourth round, I started getting a bit nervous. But seeing Federer reach the semi-final and then facing the biggest hurdle of his life, I think he, like Rajke said, exceeded our expectations. I would probably have loved a Djokovic Nadal final, because I think Djokovic has it in him to maybe take it to a five setter or taking nothing away from Nadal. I think he shut the door on Thiem last night. And anyway, we can talk all about the rain and the scheduling, but I think in the end, the best player won the tournament, isn't it?
Exactly.
So, we need to have
Yeah, correct. So the moving on to the final question that we have on the show, we've got two questions right now, which I'm going to take. First one, Rajki, I think you can answer this better. And then the next question is for Federer. So I think Prakash will go to you on that one. So the first question is, Rajki, Djokovic is on 15 Grand Slam titles, missed out on his second career slam. Do you think he can go on and win the next three like he did last time? Can he level the Grand Slam tally with Nadal, and seeing that the next three are grass and hard court, where he's the defending champion?
I mean, he can, of course, but these kind of things are not easy. I mean, all of the big three have won three slams in a row, so we kind of take these things for granted. But there is going to be a lot of competition in Wimbledon and US Open. You know, Wimbledon, we know that Federer is really revitalized, so I would have him. His chances, I think, are much better this year than last year. And US Open is always an open field. Australian Open, of course, is Djokovic's favorite tournament, so I would expect that he has his best chances there. So three in a row would be amazing for Djokovic, but ex ante, before you know, if we even get into Wimbledon, I'd have to say that it's more unlikely than likely. I mean, it's not impossible, but I wouldn't say it's greater than 50% to win three in a row again. I mean, he is human after all.
Correct. Prakash, there's a question on Federer. 37 years of age, completing 38 this August. And potentially looking at the records, 20 to 18 now, the Grand Slam tally is within two. Do you expect Federer to at least get two more Grand Slams before the next year's Wimbledon? That's the question I've got.
At least two more before next Wimbledon. So that's at least two out of four.
That is going to be there. That's like a very tough ask, right? At 37, not nearly 38, that's going to be even tougher. And I always said, I think with Federer, the past 4 or 5 years, it's just there's basically no guarantees, right? It could be because at that age, it's like any injury now could basically be the end of the career. And so you got to just take it tournament by tournament. And so far, the truth is like he hasn't won since 2018 Australian Open. So it's like 3 plus 2, right? 5 slams.
Correct.
And he hasn't, if you look at it, actually his best result has been on clay. You know, since then, because he lost in quarterfinals at Wimbledon, fourth round in both US and the Australian Open. So this is his best thing, you know. But I think, hopefully he will get a chance. But at this point, the good thing is that, as we saw, there are it's only between these three mostly, you know. And to some extent, you can say he has, at least outside the clay, he has figured out the Nadal puzzle. But I think his challenge is now, at least since 2014, if you see, his challenge has not been Nadal as much as Djokovic. So it's actually a newer puzzle he needs to solve,
He may not even
play Nadal outside clay, right? So he may not even. Very likely. That's also there. That's what happened for most of the career, that they haven't played as much outside clay as they do on clay. So I think. So the biggest finals that Federer has lost since 2014 outside clay have been to Djokovic. You know, if you take two finals at Wimbledon and a final at US Open, three of those, right?
But so even they haven't played in the last 3 years, right? I mean, last time was 2016.
Yeah, 16, yeah. So they haven't played at a Grand Slam since then. So it's going to be interesting. And I think maybe... I think if Federer wins, Halle is going to be second seed at Wimbledon.
So he has to win. And that's
correct.
The last thing you want is to be seeded number three and again get a bad draw. And play Djokovic in the semis, and Nadal gets an easy draw, and then play a very, lacking Nadal.
Right? Well, I think, what I feel is that might be Federer's chance, in the sense he doesn't want to play Djokovic in the finals, I feel, because Djokovic will be too keyed in by the time, and considering if they are on opposite sides of the draw.
Correct.
What I would like, I think it would be in Federer's best interest is to play Djokovic on in the semis, and Nadal his record in the last 6 years hasn't been good. Stellar at Wimbledon, he's been.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So play Djokovic in the semi, round. Maybe somebody else in the final. Yeah, okay.
I mean, and there's a good chance, you know, most likely he will not have to play Djokovic and Nadal back to back.
Okay.
At least at Wimbledon, you know, because. Yeah, Nadal's Wimbledon hasn't been so good the last 6 years. So there's a decent chance of that happening. And I think that will be Federer's best shot, if I feel. Because I think, basically, either Djokovic in a final, right? I don't know, of a Grand Slam. I don't think that's the way right now because he's on like a three-match winning, losing streak in the Grand Slam finals against Djokovic. And I think he wants to play him earlier than later. But then, see, if you look at Austrian Open, the semifinals and the finals, Djokovic was just, crazy good. If he plays like that, right, even in the semis, it's going to be tough. But I still think that is the best shot to beat him. And the earlier, the better.
Yeah, once he gets, we don't even know the draws, right? So let's wait for
that's
the
That's a bigger thing, of course. Yeah.
I have something for the Djokovic fans. And I think if you look at 2011 and 2015, I think Djokovic was at the peak best. I think I've seen him. 2011 was 2011 and 2015, where he went on a rampage, three out of four slams. And this is 2019, so we are talking about a 4 year gap again. This time, he's returning from an injury. He's won three out of the last four slams, and the next three are his. His chance to defend his titles again. So I think my gut tells me that he will win two out of the next three slams and close it out on Nadal is what my feeling is, because I think Federer will win, probably win one more. I think Wimbledon is more likely for Federer. But I think the US Open and the Australian no doubt goes to Djokovic. My gut says that.
I mean, it's certainly possible, but all I'm saying is these are... Like, we are so used to the big three, you know, doing the Grand Slam after Grand Slam, right? So, I mean, they are still human. They may just slip up in one slam and someone else may get a chance. So, by no means is what you're saying impossible. But, you know, who knows? Like, one of these, maybe all three slip up and we get a Cilic in 2014.
Correct. Isn't that what we all want to see? Like, a Tsitsipas or a Thiem or a Zverev. Finally get the big one and start winning those slams. I mean, I've seen people tune off during the French Open. Nothing against the Vamos fans and stuff, but it kind of gets too boring. People kind of go to sleep then.
Yeah, but again, I think the other slams are always going to be a bit more open because Nadal is so insanely good on clay. But for example, if it's a Nadal versus Federer final at the US Open, I don't think anyone's going to go to sleep.
Perfect. Yeah, that's what.
And here's the deal, right? See, Wimbledon has been the most Big Four dominant tournament, actually.
Correct.
The last, compared to all the slams, the Big Four have never lost it there. So, I mean, you include Murray. So basically,
that's crazy. Just pause for a moment and think about that. Since they won for the first time, Federer in 2003.
And this is like, just 2003. So it's like
nobody outside the Big Four has won
16 slams there. Okay, 16 slams they haven't lost.
Yep.
And the US Open in that way is the most open because you had Del Potro winning it, Cilic won it, Wawrinka won it outside the Big Four.
Yes.
So three of the players. And Australian Open, again, only Wawrinka was the only guy who broke through there. Other than the Big Four. And Murray didn't even win there. So, and the French Open, same thing, Murray didn't win, but Wawrinka has. So, basically, the next two slams are actually the most
open.
Competitive. So, for the field, right? So, Wimbledon is going to be its biggest challenge. And US Open, I guess, it's a relatively easier challenge.
Let's not forget, Wawrinka had a good French Open too. So all these guys have good French Opens. Federer, Nadal, Wawrinka, Thiem, Djokovic. So in a way, it's a very optimistic kind of slam for everybody.
And actually, I have one crazy thing. I think that you see, so the only slam that Wawrinka has been missing is Wimbledon. And he seems to be like maybe getting right in form for that. So it'd be crazy if he wins that. Because that's how slam Wawrinka does it, right?
I was coming there.
Right, he wins like... He's been ticking off one after, like, he's won three and they're three different. So the fourth one, even is it going to
I was coming there.
Career slam? That'll be crazy. But not unthinkable, you know, because, I mean, yeah, it is his toughest slam. But, you know, who knows with Wawrinka, right?
Yes. And what a slam we had. I'm kind of excited, not because the tennis season is ahead, but because we have this podcast now. And we all have our theories and we all have our patterns and records and stuff noted down. But now we can speak, and the listeners that are tuning into the podcast, let me remind you of the experience that we have here. We have a combined experience of 80 years, 30, and probably an 18 from me, because 2001. That's 78 years, and you wouldn't want to miss this podcast because of the fact that it's your favorite sport, and that is why you're tuning into this. I didn't have a catchy line to add there, but it's been great, both of you, and what couple of weeks we've had. We've started the podcast, we've got off to a flyer, and we've got a tremendous response. I hope you guys can keep sharing the link as much as possible. We will look into so for our listeners, we are now on 8 audio platforms, including Google and Spotify, if you want, and the Apple podcast. We'll be out on the Apple podcast soon enough. So Prakash and Rajke, anything that you would like to add before we end episode number 3 of the Tennis Galaxy podcast?
So I want to add this, maybe people have spotted this, but I found it interesting. Nadal with 12 French Opens now has more French Opens than Borg and Lever have slams anywhere. So Borg have like slams, and Nadal has overtaken them just using French Opens.
Yeah.
That's just phenomenal.
Absolutely. Yeah, let that sink in, correct?
Yes,
Prakash.
I think, the stage has been set, and I think it's going to be exciting the rest of the year. So let's see how things pan out. It's going to be exciting.
Correct.
It's a three-way race, right?
So the big three are in the hottest forms of their lives, careers. And as we all know, Federer is nearing 38 this August. And Djokovic is a revitalized monster. I would like to say a revitalized animal who will be looking to close the gap on Nadal. Nadal will be looking to close the gap on Federer.
Will be looking to increase the gap.
correct. Back to three, isn't it? And that gives like a psychological edge to the Swiss maestro, because if you ask me, since 2017, and when it was 14 and 17, 17 for Federer and 14 for Nadal, and then Federer won his 18th. I think that's where, I think if Nadal had won that, maybe things would have been probably a bit different. But I think that's destiny, and that's what we will see what happens. So anyway, a great time discussing the Roland Garros final with you, all the possibilities. I hope we have a roof next year, for God's sake, because we don't want delays, and we don't want other fans to have excuses, but it's always been fun talking to you guys. Make sure you share this link. The podcast will be out in a couple of hours' time. Here's your host, Prasad, signing out with Prakash and Raj K. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.